The Attack Zone, Season 3, Episode 7, Six Pack Month. Hello there, Dice fans. You have once again stepped into the Attack Zone, where we bring you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. This is Dave here, your host, and it is just me for the moment, but in just a short while, we will welcome Michaela over from the Reserve Pool podcast, and she's going to step in and aid me in a six-pack. For it is, as I mentioned in the last episode and in the title here to this show, it is six-pack month. The main reason for that is because there are a lot of obligations that I myself have this month, but we also didn't want to let the show drop, and we knew that the six-pack was a good, compelling way that we could have a quality episode with some good content, but also have the work be rather light so that I can, like, for example, pass my class that I'm taking right now as I work on my master's degree and maintain my sanity as some very large and time-intensive projects at work all kind of culminate all at the same time. So Michaela's going to join me in just a little bit, but first, we have to name our winner for the month of March for our six-pack giveaway. There's a lot of cool stuff that we have there, including a super rare. We have the Barry Allen Flash, and as always, some great foils and rares and so forth and so on. So we're going to get to that. Check out patreon.com/theattackzone. We give away all of the foils and rares and so forth that we get when we open the six-pack, and that's a way to thank you for helping us keep the six-pack going as a segment. So we greatly appreciate that. I should point out that one of my mailings recently came back to me in the mail, and I will figure out why. Actually, that like just happened. So I'll figure out why that happened and get it back out to you. But hopefully it's not a big deal. I'll probably just verify that I have the correct address from the email and that I didn't bring something incorrect with me. I am behind on one of the, or both of the ones for last month, and that is on me. I apologize. Every time I went to get more supplies, or when I should have been getting more supplies, I forgot to get a couple more things, so I need some more bubble mailers, and that is just on me, and I am sorry. We'll get that to you, I promise. In the meantime, for the month of March, our winner is Hank Wetzel. Hank, thank you very much for your support, sir. And you have won yourself a super rare Barry Allen, as well as some other cool stuff from the Green Arrow Flash and Deadpool sets. So, Hank, I'll get an email out to you, or if you hear this before I email you, send me one or a private message on thereservepool.com, and we will get that out to you. All right. Now, without further ado, let's flip over to the six-pack, and let's welcome Michaela into the show. So, Michaela, welcome to the Attack Zone. It's good to have you appearing here. And I think this is going to be a really neat opportunity to get some other voices that haven't been on the show and or haven't been on the show in a while, as the case may be, to talk about draft and their approach and then run through a six-pack. So if I can put you on the spot to begin with right away, when you sit down at a table and start cracking your packs open, how do you think about draft? What's your approach?
So I didn't realize that there was like an acronym for it until the podcast a few weeks ago, where you mentioned BREAD, the acronym. Yep. Bombs, removal, efficiency, aggro, and then dudes. It's definitely, that's how I draft. So like when a new set comes out, I get really excited and I spoil all the cards for myself and I start thinking about different interactions and how this could work or that could work. But like when you sit down and you open those packs, the first thing I look for is how, out of these two packs, how am I going to win? Because that's usually how it shakes out. You have to start figuring out how you're going to win in that first set of packs you open. Sometimes you get lucky and there's nothing there and you get past something that's really good because the guy next to you just got the last super rare he needed. But I don't like to count on that. And so like after I've figured out what my win condition is and successfully drafted it, then I start moving down the list and going, okay, how do I get to this win condition? How do I protect this win condition? I know this other card's in the set, and I saw a die on the table. I bet, you know, Jared over there is probably going to draft it and use it against me, so how do I stop him? And I start moving down the line like that.
That's a pretty good way to do it. And does Jared commonly use stuff against you, or is that just a name that popped into your head?
No, Jared's one of our local players. But Jared and Craig were early members of our scene, and they were there when I joined, and they're kind of the ones that taught me and my partner how to play, how to actually, okay. Like, you know, like they taught us how to PXG properly. Whenever Jared and I are both at a draft, we still kind of have this relationship of like, all right, who got the better draft and how are you going to stop the other person?
I like
for
it.
The Rainbow Draft weekend for the Rainbow Strahds. He was very frustrated because I was the one that lucked out on the draft. I ended up with 4 beholders. And so I just ran. Yeah. I ran beholder dice and just got a bunch of them out and then threw an imprisoned or a cloud kill. I can't remember which I ran on the field and then swung in.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Most of the time our drafts go a little bit better, a little bit more evenly matched. Like I might draft something really aggro and he'll draft the control counterpart to it. And we'll have this long slog of a battle right up to the time limit. And they're always great games. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty fun. I had a similar experience where in one of the first Green Arrow Flash drafts we did, I managed to get 4 Common Firestorm and 4 dice.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, okay, removal, removal, removal. Like, here we go. And then I had cold guns, so I could remove 4 or 5 things every turn easily. It was fun. All right, so then speaking of Green Arrow Flash, that's what we're going to look at today. So I'll be curious to hear your thoughts here as we go through this. And as always, we will start with the commons. We're looking for our first pick from this pack. We want to think about what will we see in the rainbow and all those normal things. So we start with King Shark Underwater Aggression, his 6-fist Suicide Squad member. As Team Watch, you can sacrifice him to deal 2 damage to all opposing character dice. Yeah, and some great great attack stats here. King Shark.
Right, yeah. King Shark's die is fantastic. This isn't my favorite version of him in set. A lot of these newer non-targeting damage abilities, they're kind of like a Green Goliath Light. They're all 2 damage, and you can only do it once, which is just not quite enough for an effective board clear. And then on top of that, he's a 6 cost, and you have to sacrifice him so you don't get to use his great attack stats whenever you swing in.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Not to mention the fact that we've seen some slightly better defensive stats on the whole the last couple of sets, too. That makes it a little tougher to use it.
Yeah. That being said, I have seen a Suicide Squad team put together, but this wouldn't be my first pick.
No, I agree. You need to like really luck into some specific pieces to have that
exactly.
be an effective team.
Exactly.
Okay. Black Canary, like mother, like daughter. Like mother. Like mother, like daughter. The 3-fist Justice League member, she has no text. So she would be the quintessential dude, except that she's not a dude. She's a girl, or a lady.
A dudette?
But whatever.
Is that still a thing?
She falls into the D category. What?
Oh, I said a dudette. Is that still a thing?
Oh, a dudette. There we go. Yeah. I gotta remember. Like, I learned that word from the Ninja Turtles.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure.
What a great TV show.
So she's a dudette. But is she a first pick?
Well, I mean, dudes is the last word in the bread acronym. So no, I'm sorry, yeah. Black Canary. I really like you in the Green Arrow Flash TV show, but just not here, not today.
Totally agree. It would be a great card to pick up late, just because.
Yeah, it's a 3 cost.
It's a cheap, reliable.
Right, great fielding stats. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. Speaking of inexpensive and reliable cards for 3, Huntress, the Hunt Begins, a 3-bolt villain. While active, whenever you roll a question mark, you may spin each Huntress die up a level for each question mark rolled. I'm a big fan of this card, and we were talking a little bit about it pre-show.
Yeah, so the first Green Arrow Flash draft I did, I was definitely feeling more of my Johnny side than my Spike side, and I drafted into Huntress and the atom, right? And so you spin up your huntress when you roll the question marks, you polymorph it over to the atom, and then you spin them down to deal to do your targeted removal. It was very complicated and very energy inefficient, but it was a lot of fun. That being said, unless you're trying specifically to try that combo out, again, not exactly a first pick here. It's not a bomb. It's not your win condition right there.
No, but I do like that if there is enough of her on the table, she's a viable, like, she's going to do some work and she'll beef up as it goes.
Definitely.
So she becomes a more effective attacker and blocker. So I think she can do a little more work in the field, but ideally, no, not a first pick. Best one that we've gotten so far yet, though. Barry Allen, Supersonic Punch, crossover character here, 5, Bolt Fist, Justice League. With synergy, while active, you may pay Bolt Fist to give a Barry Allen character die, plus 2 attack, and plus 4 defense until the end of turn.
Why don't any of the Flashes have fast?
I don't know.
Because, like, if that die at that cost just had fast, then it might be worth drafting.
Be like, cool. Yep. Well, you know, and that's the funny thing is that characters that are, you would assume, slower than Flash have fast.
He does, like, inevitably several times a season or a series or an arc seem to be able to find a way to lose the Speed Force. So I guess it's just every Dice Masters game happens when Barry Allen has lost the Speed Force again.
Apparently. But I mean, like, Speedy has fast. And I know that her name might be Speedy, but she's not faster than Flash. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's an interesting ability here. It beefs him up, but there's nothing that he gives you that makes it easy to work with. I don't know. I don't know if it's something that's worthwhile.
Right. I mean, comparative. So, like, you know, with that those die stats, he might be great, say, with Overcrush as a way to get him through. But then you could run Cone of Cold, and for the same amount of energy, you could give him plus 4 attack. So,
right.
It's just not... For an ability that is keyworded synergy, it's not exactly synergistic.
I agree. And then what do you do with it once he's pumped?
Yeah. I don't know.
It requires
I don't have a good answer for you.
Parts.
Yeah.
No, exactly. All right, Cyborg, a new man, 4 shield, Teen Titan. While blocking, character dice he knocks out with combat damage are sent to the used pile. 2-4, 3-5, and 4-6 for his stats.
It's keeps going in our theme of, like, this is... a lot of cards in the set have these cool abilities and interactions that, like, they really get the tinkerers and the brewers thinking, but it's still not the win condition that we're hoping for out of this pack.
I agree with you there. That said, right now, I would lean towards taking it because it's one of those kinds of cards that makes things more difficult for my opponent. If I put this out there, my opponent's not going to consider attacking with that sidekick just in hopes that I'll, you know, knock it out and send it to the send it to his prep area or whatever, right?
Oh,
because
definitely.
Cyborg,
like,
makes them rethink their chump attacks.
Yeah, in terms of, like, priority picks, what we've seen so far, Huntress and Cyborg are definitely there. That's the best
we
can
leading
do so far.
Cyborg, I think. Yeah, I agree. Maybe a little more Cyborg because he almost fulfills, like, a removal kind of niche, even though he's not, like, strictly actual removal. But he can be in positions to make the board, you know, tilted a little bit more towards you.
Right.
All right. Next up, last common, we have Rip Hunter's Chalkboard. Only Zatara can reach the point. This one is the 4 cost mask shield. Add all dice in your bag to your used pile. For each mask or shield character added to your used pile in this way, gain 1 life. But what we really care about is the global, which we all know pays shield. The first die you purchase this turn is added to your prep area instead of your used pile. So here's an efficiency piece.
Yeah. In this set, because Chalkboard and Star Labs are so big in the meta, I usually either just see if I end up with this card or I wait for my opponents to bring it, because usually you can kind of count on that. So not a first pick for me. It doesn't beat out Cyborg or Huntress. But it is nice to have on the table if either you or your opponent brings it in this set.
I agree. Let's put this one out there. What if you have this in your hand and you look out and there's only one chalkboard die on the table?
Ooh,
does that up its value to you at all?
Yeah, that changes things. Because then I wonder, you know, what can I draft? Opens up the avenue of just weenie drafting. Because like, Hal Jordan's in this set. So say there's a ton of Hal Jordan dice and only one chalkboard. That might be a viable strategy. You mm-hmm. just flood out Hal Jordan's and swing in.
Yeah. We had the situation at the PDC draft that we ran just this past weekend. There was a common and an uncommon Rip Hunter's chalkboard, and that was it. No other Rip Hunter's chalkboards. And, of course, the uncommon does not have the global.
Right.
So, yeah, it was an interesting situation, and I didn't get to watch all of the games that closely to know how that fared. I don't remember who ended up with it. I know that Truby won, but I don't remember. What I remember is he had Rare Firestorm. I don't remember if he had chalkboard or not. So I didn't get to play. I just TO'd. We would have had an odd number if I had played, and I was happy to run it. Okay, so as we move out of here, we are looking hard at Cyborg and Huntress.
Yeah.
Let's look at uncommons. Deathstroke, high price. Crossover character here, 6 Fist Shield. Villain, Crosspulse. When you purchase this die, knock out all opposing sidekick dice.
So this one is conceivably a win condition, but it's not my favorite, and it's hard to get to work.
Mm-hmm. You need to be able for it to be kind of a win condition, because once he's on the field, he's just more stats that can be blocked.
Exactly.
In order for him to be a win condition, you have to have 6 energy that you can spend at a time when knocking all those sidekicks out will win you the game. Not impossible as you get late game and you have some things working out, but I've also found that sometimes late game, that energy shouldn't be spent. It should be saved for you to survive. I don't know that this gets you there, and if it doesn't destroy your opponent that turn, well, they now have a whole bunch of sidekicks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's all my thoughts on it.
Yep. Okay, then. Huntress, Brutal Justice, the 4-bolt Bat Family character. When fielded, you may re-roll any of your sidekick dice in the field zone or reserve pool.
I don't know if I've ever actually played this card in draft. I always go with the common.
Nor have I. She's not very... No, this one's not very popular. I don't think it has a high level of usage. I think there are times when it could be used. It could complement some things, but it's not anything you'd take early.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, maybe if you know, you drafted Gorilla Grodd in this draft and you needed a way to hit that 7, like, you could field her mm-hmm. and have 3 other sidekicks and then 4 sidekicks in the field and, fingers crossed, roll all of those into
get
energy.
Get some energy out. Yeah, I mean, it could be a means of using some ramp. You have to have those sidekicks in the first place, though with things like Star Labs, that might be possible.
Yeah, but like, now we're talking about all these different pieces to get to work for a specific win condition that we still don't have yet, so.
Right. Let me throw this out there for you, though. Does this entice you a little more for Huntress, thinking that this one might wheel, so you take the common, and then you figure this will come back around late, and you might get a second die for her?
Yeah.
Or yeah. Do you think it's unlikely that this would wheel?
In our group locally in St. Louis, it would probably wheel unless it was like early in the set and somebody didn't have this card yet and they were rare mm-hmm. drafting, even though it's an uncommon. But
right.
Yeah, after we've drafted it a few times, it'd probably wheel.
So does that up the common Huntress's stock, or is Cyborg still probably more useful?
I think at this point it depends on your play style. Mm-hmm. I tend to prefer Huntress. Just like, a big reason for me is that Huntress is a 3 cost versus Cyborg's 4 cost. But you know, it really depends on what's on the table, what's in the other pack. It's hard True. To give a definitive answer there. It raises the worth of Huntress in my eyes. I'm just not sure if I would still take it over Cyborg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think it's interesting to look at this from, like, what would we consider if we're in the moment and we have these things, or what might sway our viewpoint. And so sometimes it does end up being a little bit abstract, but then we can kind of get into for the listeners too. What do we, well, if we saw this, we might think about it this way, like kind of help open up some of the process.
Yeah.
Okay. Power Ring. Curse of Volthoom, whatever that is. He is a four-bolt crime syndicate and villain character. Pretty great. We have Owlman coming up, we now know, in the next set. So the only crime syndicate we're missing, and I don't know why it wasn't in the Green Arrow Flash set, would be... Oh, I'm actually blanking on his name now. But that one, the Flash counterpart. That's dumb of me. I don't know why. I can't remember. When fielded, if your opponent has no active villain character dice, Power Ring deals them one damage.
I really wish we'd seen the common.
Mm-hmm.
The uncommon, like, it can be nice just to... Because in draft, you know, getting that little bit of burn is important. Because, like, how many times are you just, like, one or two damage away from lethal? And you just think, if I had just attacked with those sidekicks earlier in the game or something, you know? But yep. This one isn't the win condition that the common one is. And in St. Louis, at least, we never have a lot of Power Ring dice. And if you don't start with the common, you're not getting it. So,
right.
Knowing that, the most value this card has to me is hate drafting. So my opponents can't get more Power Ring dice.
Fair enough. And that one is a foil. So we'll set it aside for one of the backers.
Oh.
Yeah. Merlin, League of His Own, is a 4-bolt villain. While active once per turn during your main step, you may pay 2 generic energy to give a non-crossover character die -2 and a crossover character die +2 attack.
It's another really cool tech piece that's in this set. I really yeah. like drafting this set because of how many interactions and tech pieces there are and all these cool little combos that you can put together. But on its own, I don't know that I'd run it.
I agree. So we're struggling to find a win condition here. Let's see if the rares get us anywhere. We start off with the Atom, Littlest Big Man, the 4-fist Teen Titan. While the Atom is active, whenever you could use a global ability, you may spin him to level 1 and spin another target character die to level 3.
This could be useful for a player that likes to do sort of transfer power style combat tricks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could hope that your opponent would forget about this, and then you can spin another unblocked character up, or maybe play with some transfer powers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I'd take it over Huntress or Cyborg.
No, I don't think so either. Plus, I looked. It's not like you could really... The only thing with bursts in this set, if my search thing here is working correctly, would be the Cold Gun and Star Labs. So nothing that could really be affected with the Atom anyway. So it's not like you're trying to manipulate dice to get the burst faces. And he's just so weak on level 1.
Yeah.
And that's difficult as well. All right, our last shot here at something good... No, not that there's been bad things, but our last shot of the potential win condition.
Yeah.
Batgirl, Eidetic Memory, 3-mask Bat Family. While active, your opponents may not target your Batgirl character dice. So it's interesting that of the cards we've selected here so far, she has a very similar stat line to Huntress. Obviously, Cyborg is a little bit beefier on defense, but their attack stats are all somewhat similar. To one another, with Batgirl having the edge on level 1.
This is another one of those where I wish we'd seen the common. I really like mm-hmm. the common in this set because there's so many character abilities that everybody really likes to use. And if you can draft just one card of that common, you know, that shuts down Static, that shuts down Atom.
It sure does.
But unless I needed the rare for my collection, I'm not super fond of it.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely still leaning towards Huntress or Cyborg at this point and hoping that our second pack has a win condition or that our opponent passes us something or that we can put together enough removal to just get a wide field through.
Right. Well, someone will get that Batgirl for their collection. So my thought is I'm looking at Huntress because I think there's a good shot I can get a second die at her of hers. And if I'm struggling to find a win condition otherwise, I might go small with whatever Huntresses I can get and some of those other types of characters, get a wide field and try Villainous Pact action for the win.
Yeah, I think that's solid. I've also run, you know, like any of the board clears work pretty well for something like that. Something, mm-hmm. You know, there's the classic Cloud Kill. There's, you know, just anything that'll let a few characters through.
Right. I agree.
And who knows? You might something that gives you a little bit more removal later.
Right. Well, and for all we know, we have a common Firestorm in our other pack. Or
right. And then that would be perfect. Just get like a bunch of weenies with good stat lines and a Firestorm and you're good to go.
You got the removal and whatever else you could hope for. Yep. Yeah, not the easiest one to navigate there, but I think sometimes those make for the most interesting conversations because it's like, well, how would we work around this, you know?
Yeah, I think so too. Because like if we'd seen a Gorilla Grodd, it would have been like, well, that's a no-brainer. Or, you know, a rare Merlin or any of those cards.
Yeah, there's a couple of times where we'll do a six-pack, and it's exactly that. It's like, okay, this card, no. This card, no. Oh, wait, we're in on commons. Oh, look, Gorilla Grodd. Okay, that's it. Let's just stop the segment here. And then every card, it's like, ooh, we have this rare. Well, it's not better than Gorilla Grodd. Ooh, we have the... Oh, it's not better than Gorilla Grodd.
Yeah. I think that organizing your... Like, so when I draft, I always organize all of the cards. I do it by alphabetical order, but I know some of the other people in St. Louis will do it by, like, purchase cost or something. But I think it's important to actively organize them so that you make sure you see all of your cards and you spot the one that's important. That way you're never missing something and accidentally passing it when you thought it was the common instead of the uncommon because you were in a hurry or something.
Yeah, I do the similar kind of sort. And then what I do, because I'm paranoid, is I kind of give it a little shuffle before I send it over to my opponent because I don't want them to know what I'm prioritizing.
Yeah, yeah. If you organize in any non-random thing, that's definitely not a bad idea if you're playing with highly competitive players. But that's why I go with alphabetical orders because... you know, it doesn't really reveal anything.
Not a lot of information there, yeah.
And now it's kind of an inside joke in St. Louis. Like, I alphabetize every hand I get past, and then Jared again will de-alphabetize it just to mess with me.
It's good to have that, you know, friendly nemesis, right?
Right.
Well, Michaela, thanks for hopping on and knocking out this six-pack. I appreciate you willing to do that.
Yeah, glad to. Anytime. That.
I appreciate you dealing with my lack of command of the English language tonight, too.
That's why we play music, right? It's easier to express ourselves that way.
Yeah, we can just talk. Well, I flubbed my share of notes, too, but who hasn't? All right. Well, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. We know that there are a lot of ways that you can spend your time, and we continue to be grateful that you choose to spend it with us. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Theme music, courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration has been given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool every Thursday, and The Prep Area, running opposite Tuesdays from us. We'll be back again in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.